on, pick it up!
Radio Cadale, your anarch is free.
Welcome to Radio Cavallo.
Yay!
I'm Santoria.
And I'm Mitchell.
Throughout the show, we're very pleased because we're going to be doing a Desert Island Disc segment. So Krista Young has agreed to sit in this Radio Cavallo show, which is fantastic. Hello! So we're going to be doing Desert Island Discs with DJ Black Rainbow. So DJ Black Rainbow has selected six kick-ass tracks for us to play and sort of told us a bit about the background and what's going on with those. That's going to be fantastic. And then also at the end we get to find out with DJ Black Rainbow's books that she's going to bring to the island, as well as what her luxury item will be. So stay tuned for that one.
Also on this show, we have interviewed a whole heap of bands from the BDS gig at the Black Swan. We've got a live interview coming up with Spanner, who played there. We've got pre-recorded gig with Cup on Fire and the Autonomads, and we're just talking to them about how they combine activism and music and what it means to be an activist and a musician. Also, keeping in line with this, I have a interview with a woman named Hadass, who writes a zine called Fallopian Falafel, and she's based in Jerusalem and is quite involved with Riot Girl culture. So I have a chat to her about how Riot Girl combines music and activism as well. And also coming up, we've got some Vox Pops with the folks from the November 30 strike.
And we also have an interview with, we're like graced with fantastic guests today. We had Aldous Huxley come right into our studio here in the library at Cavallo. We were like shocked. Mitchell was forced to say, get out! Actually meant to come in.
Which is interpreted correctly, fortunately.
Yeah. Don't want to offend Aldous. And so we have Aldous Huxley from the Stop Gem campaign coming in to speak to us. That's fantastic. And then we also, we speak to Spanner Live, and we have the Desert Island Discs. Great. So next we're going to go to the global and local updates. This is a communique that we saw on Bristol Indie Media. There was an attack on Lloyds Bank Depot. At 4:30 on Thursday, the 15th of December, we attacked Bristol's Lloyds Bank Depot in solidarity with comrades imprisoned in Greece, Chile, Switzerland, and all over the world. We painted the message, "Until all are free," on the building, and positioned three bins of flammable materials soaked in gasoline in front of their wooden doors and set them alight. Unfortunately, our attempt to burn the building down was scuppered, that's a new word for me, scuppered by fast emergency service response. We took this action to send our love and solidarity to our revolutionary struggle comrades on trial in Greece and the Chilean comrades persecuted by the bomb case, also to Silva, Costa, and Billy, the Swiss comrades persecuted for the IBM nanotechnology building, and for all those imprisoned for their political beliefs. Attacks won't stop until we're all free. And this was written by anarchist individuals in cells of the FAI. And also, when it was just being discussed earlier, we were sort of discussing about the number of sort of trolling remarks there. I wish I could think of something more witty to say to them, but they suck, I don't know. It's just, I guess don't feed the trolls. And Viola takes another hit thanks to the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions campaign. According to Schnews, the Israeli boycott campaign has struck again as French multinational Veolia failed to win a £485 million contract to provide waste management services in West London. The company has lost public contracts from Europe and Australia and faces legal action in France and pension funds in Norway, Denmark and Sweden have all disinvested in them since their complicity in the Israeli occupation came to light. And for some global updates, many of you may have heard about what they're calling the Aceh 64 now. So there's been solidarity actions around the world. Basically what happened was the Indonesian authority caught the cops in Banda Aceh in Indonesia. They busted a punk gig on December 10th and arrested 64 people who were carted off for moral re-education, which sounds way crazy. They were not abandoned by the brothers under the Mohawk, brothers and sisters, I should say. Under the Mohawk, there have been actions and protests at Indonesian embassies around the world have been targeted, and so there's been lots of solidarity with them. And so this story has, for many, as many of the other ones and sometimes we've mentioned, contained some details which make for hard listening, so please consider lowering the volume for a few seconds if you think something like that might not help you get through your day. So three Ukrainian activists returned home after abuse at the hands of police in Belarus. I'm going to screw up the names here, sorry. So Alexandra Nemchinova, Ina Shishako, and Oksana Shenko are activists of the women's movement Femin. They were abducted by the KGB security officers in Belarus, just so you know, didn't bother rebranding its political police after the collapse of the Soviet Union. During a protest against Belarus's authoritarian president, they were beaten, humiliated, and left naked in the forest. They were protesting in Minsk on Monday, December 19th, over President Alexander Lukashenko's suppression of the opposition. They bared their breasts in protest, wanting to bring attention to Belarus's very own despot. After the protest, they were taken into nearby woods by Belarusian security forces, where they were interrogated for 12 hours, stripped of their clothes in below zero temperatures, covered in paint, had some of their hair cut off, smacked in the face, punched in the back, and told they were going to be killed and raped. Later on, they were forced to sit on a bus where they were not allowed to move or speak, and were prevented by doing so by being beaten. In the end of their ordeal, the three activists were left semi-naked in the forest, where they were eventually aided by locals and contacted the Ukrainian embassy. Some more unfortunate news, so eight were killed in a protest against Australian gold mining company in Bima, Indonesia. So again in Indonesia. So on December 24th, a tragedy occurred in Bima, Indonesia, and eight people are now confirmed dead. They were killed by police during the resistance, and it began when thousands of people, including farmers, blockaded the harbour of Sape in Bima. They were protesting the government's decision to give permission to PTSMN to mine gold in the area. In the area is about 24,980 acres. The people there are worried about the environmental damage. It is because most of the people work as farmers and fishermen. The presence of the mine will destroy the water source and finally agricultural ways in the area and will be damaged. Protesters in Makassar on December 26th, there's a big demo against the police brutality and the murdered folks in Bima. And so it turned into basically a mass rampage. Protests that followed, more than 300 people, they attacked the police station at Sudirman Street, and they threw by just throwing bricks and stones, whatever other hard objects they could find. Also from 325 magazine, in Melbourne there was an attack on the Commonwealth Bank branch in Australia. In the early hours of December 24th, we attacked the Mountain Gate branch of the Commonwealth Bank with rocks, causing some damage to the windows and small spontaneous expression of nihilistic solidarity with our comrades fighting the state, both here in Australia and all over the world. We would like to dedicate this action to the comrades Jessica Bigby and Jonathan Penman, who were arrested by the pigs and accused of the counterattack against transit cop violence at North Melbourne Railway Station, and the comrades who evaded capture and are still running free. Also, so recently, there's some satellite photos that track the expansion of tar sands oil extraction in Canada have emerged. Newly released satellite photos revealed the dramatic expansion of the extraction of tar sands oil in Alberta, Canada. Over the course of the last 10 years, approximately 232 miles have been exposed by the energy-intensive process. According to Canada's Environmental Ministry, the expansion is expected to double in the next decade, which would result in the destruction of 740,000 acres of boreal forest and 30% and a 30% increase of the carbon emissions. And so finally, in the United States, the U.S. is going to sell fighter jets to Saudi Arabia. The Obama administration is reportedly preparing to announce a new round of military sales to Saudi Arabia. The Associated Press reports the United States has reached a deal to provide Saudi Arabia with 84 new fighter jets and upgrades for 70 more, for a total of nearly $30 billion of weapon sales. The sale would come just over a year after the United States reached a $60 billion agreement to sell advanced military aircraft to Saudi Arabia, the largest ever single arms deal in the United States history.
We're singing
R-A-D-I-O.
We're singing
R-A-D-I-O.
So now we're going to go for a turn interview with Aldous Huxley from the Stop GM campaign. Hey,
hi.
Aldous. Hey, how are you doing?
Right, yeah.
Great. Loved your books, by the way.
Thank you. Made me well. It was really hard.
It was quite a gem, though. I guess what I'm sort of interested, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on with the GM foods over the past little while.
Yes.
And what I wasn't really aware of this, but what I've recently become aware of is there's been a 5-year moratorium in the European Union on GM products. But that's over now. So can you tell us a little bit about the implications of this policy change? Like, what's going on with GM now?
Yeah, sure. The major investors in GM are mainly in the US. Since the moratorium has ended, that means that companies can come and ask each country individually if it wants to grow GM food. At the moment in the UK, it's banned to grow it, but it's not banned to have licenses to do testing.
Mm-hmm.
The first country in Europe that's taken on growing GM commercially is Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's meant for other growers is that there's been cross-contamination of especially organic maize. So that's really bad news. It's come back onto the map and we're going to have to fight it off again like we did 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like it. And so is GM testing, is that sort of widespread? Is that going on very much in the UK?
It is in a few universities and particularly the John Innes Centre, which is in Norwich.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing some testing basically to try and get the public on board again onto GM because the public was so against it. It's now started its new propaganda machine. And so it decided to start using a potato and they wanted to make a genetically modified blight-resistant potato. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in the history of people, is like remembering what happened in Ireland with the blight. So they're going for that again. There's been research into growing organic or conventionally grown potatoes which are blight resistant as well. StopGM, along with Genetics Engineering Network, took a tractor full of organic blight resistant potatoes and delivered them to the John Innes Centre and said, here you go, they already exist. What are you doing spending public money on this kind of research when we need research more on normal breeding crops?
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds like my impression of the industry, the genetically modified industry, I guess you could say, the folks that promote that kind of stuff, they want to really promote the sort of scientists, that they have the sort of science view of things. But I think it doesn't sound like it's completely backed up then, that their products are better necessarily.
That's right, yeah. Unfortunately, our government at the moment, the head of DEFRA used to be a pro-biotech company lobbyist herself. Mm. So this is the most GM-friendly government there is. In terms of the science, it's better science to not use the Earth as a laboratory because of the implications it could have for the whole world. When you're doing that kind of testing in a research centre, you've got a very small space and you don't really know what the effects are going to be long term. But now we're seeing, because a lot of GM is being grown in the United States and also in southern countries as well, as in the global south, we're now seeing that the technology isn't working. Mm-hmm. Because of the way GM is, which I could explain a bit more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so there's sort of like about three different sort of ways of GM technology that's being used in crops now.
Mm-hmm.
One is making a pesticide within the actual plant itself, so it resists pests.
Mm-hmm.
What that does is it means that there's toxins in the plant, and therefore what has been seen now is that there are bugs and superbugs. Basically, mm-hmm. So what happens in evolution is nature just adapts to things.
Sort of like antibiotics?
Yeah, they use also antibiotic resistance as well. Yeah, a bit like antibiotics.
Less useful now than they used to be because
that's true. Yeah,
things have adapted to them.
Yeah, that's right. And studies have shown that before the companies were saying that there's no way the toxins that were in the plant could go into the body of a person, now it's been shown that it is actually going into the bloodstreams and being absorbed by the gut.
Wow. And so do you have an idea what foods that are around in the UK that are actually genetically modified?
Yep. At the moment, if you like having your chips and your takeaways, then it's likely to be in there because it's the cheapest on the market. It's in blended vegetable oil, and at the moment StopGM has a campaign for people to munch their way through their local takeaways and ask their local takeaways what kind of oil they're using and advise them on the fact that it's against the law as well to sell it without telling people, because people have a choice in this country at least about what they eat and to make the decision whether they want to consume GM or not.
Around genetically modified foods, Monsanto is sort of the company that's really associated with genetically modified foods and things. So can you tell us a bit about them and how they work and how have people maybe resisted the dominance as well?
What I think about these companies, I mean, Monsanto is the biggest, and then Syngenta and then BASF,
mm-hmm.
Is they're really trying to work with governments and businesses to create something called food security, which is a way of controlling our food systems right from the very seed. So what they want to do is, as soon as they've created a new gene, a new crop and a new variety, they can patent life, basically. That is totally not on, because we have a food heritage, and our food heritage is amazing idea where you have biodiversity. Plants can figure out how to resist certain animals that eat them, and the more diversity we have both basically in our own lives and also in our food, the more likely we're going to have food for sovereignty. So that's food sovereignty, which is what people like organisations like Via Campesina want. They want to have control over their own food systems. Just did a rant at you there.
That was great.
Hope you're okay with that, guys.
I think we're okay with that here. We have a few rants on Rita Covelli from time to time, so it's good. And can you tell us a bit about the history of resistance to GM in the UK and what Stop GM has been doing recently as well?
Yeah, sure. So around like mid-90s, late-90s, there was a organic farm and right next to it had a test site of GM. And there was a big local campaign around that. The local organic farmer wasn't really into that. It's the biggest organic farmer in the UK, which is Riverford Farm.
So they picked a fight.
Since it's gone, you know, it's completely GM free, and so is the country, because of particular actions like going into fields and picking them and putting them into bags and making sure they're safe and they don't cross-contaminate.
Decontaminating.
Calling it decontaminating or crop trashing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And that happened all the way around the country, wherever a site was seen, either by night or day, open or closed, there was all that kind of stuff going on. So it was like the WI even got involved.
The Women's Institute,
well. Yeah. And so they were like, not messing with our land, go away. So it worked. It was really good. We have a gathering people are invited to if they want to come. That's going to be here at Cabelli on the 7th and 8th of January 2012.
Nice.
And we're also going to have a Southwest Action on GM, particularly oil, on the 4th of February. So if people want to get involved and come round, we're thinking about going through the whole of Stokes Croft and then into Eastern and starting with a kind of like local.
Keeping people really
invited to come and do that stuff if they want to. And you can find out more on www.stopgm.org.uk, and you can also find the book called Standing Our Ground, which is also in the info shop at Cabelli. It's about the science and politics behind the resistance to GM.
Oh, great. So lots of good reasons to stop into Cabelli, but also lots of great ways to plug into the campaign. Wonderful. So thanks a lot.
I've
learned a lot. So
oh, good.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Yes, I'll be careful and read
the careful out there what you're eating. Cheers.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, the next track is Keeping It British, Keeping It Diasporically British, should I say. It's Asian Dub Foundation.
Yes.
It's a tune from 96. It's less well known of their tunes, but for me it's always just push the right buttons. It's a tune called Box. Chorus of the tune just kind of sums up how people inherently choose to read you as a British-born Asian person, and also has, I think, a necessary dig at some of the cultural appropriation of kind of South Asian spirituality. And what I really like about this tune and the band is that they really challenge what your conceptions of a South Asian person are, and these assumptions that, you know, you're all fucking levitating and all really zen, and actually, yeah, maybe some of us are, but also we can be really fucking angry and not passive as kind of historically, you know, first and some second generation Asians in Britain have been kind of seen as like a passive population.
Fuck.
again. Now I'm here with DJ Black Rainbow, local DJ from Bristol.
Hey.
Hey. Do you want to tell me how you got started into DJing?
Oh, how I got started into DJing was absolutely by mistake. My then lover had a DJ slot at a local pub. She had to rush off to a funeral, so said, here's a box of records, these are the buttons, you'll be fine. And that was my first DJ experience, and after that, I quite liked it.
So would you say, for people that may or may not have the opinion that DJing isn't that difficult, would you sort of say, no, it's an entirely legitimate musical act?
For years, like, I've kind of thought of myself more as an kind of old-school selector over being a DJ. So for some people, being a DJ is all about the technical brilliance, and there is musicality happening in the way that they're mixing tunes up together and bringing in samples and all of that. And, you know, there are times that I play records and that's what I'm aiming to do, is, you know, bring together two great sounds and make a whole new sound and bring in bits of live rap and poetry or whatever. But for me, you know, I was very influenced by living in a very kind of Afro-Caribbean area as a kid, and by that whole kind of reggae sound system and selector culture, which was all about playing really good tunes. It didn't matter if you were, you know, mixing them up, but being really conscious about what you're selecting musically, or what messages, what kind of, what news you're trying to get out to the crowd that's listening.
So when you are DJing, are you sort of considering the political context in which you're playing, and are you like choosing to do gigs which maybe are more in line with your politics, or are you more like vaguely just interested in DJing?
I think a bit of both. Like, you know, when I first started, the first time was a pure accident. When I started playing music seriously, I was living in a bit of the UK that was really monoculture. Mm. It was very white, it was very straight, and as a queer of colour, there was no representations of anyone like me, and there was no visibility, and it wasn't really the friendliest place to live. Mm. So at first, you know, I just wanted to play bits of party music because that's what I could get hold of in charity shops, but yeah, have this kind of funny looking brown DJ up on a stage or up behind the decks, and in that trying to make a message itself and show the universality of music. Like, you might think all of these things about me, but I can make your ass fucking boogie. So, you know, maybe we're not so different after all. Then when I started being able to, well, really geek out on the music and was having quite serendipitous moments of finding on vinyl really badass, like political conscious and danceable tunes.
Awesome.
Then yeah, it became more and more about the message. When I moved to Bristol, I had a bit of an idea that, you know, music was part of the reason that I was moving here. So I've done some kind of mainstream gigs. You know, really, they just don't move me, you know, if I'm just kind of playing for a little bit of money. It got to the point that I think in 2009, somebody posted up on Bristol Indie Media a benefit gig and dubbed me the queen, although I'm a bit dubious about that, the Bristol queen of benefit gigs. So I guess that says something about how and where I play music.
Yeah. Would you prefer Princess?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
You know, as the ash shakes, like, the head starts thinking.
Awesome. That's a good general philosophy. Thinking all the time. Awesome.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm Kirsty Hang, and we are now on Desert Island. We're doing a sample for Radio Cavelli, a very special show. So, I was wondering, if you're going to be stuck on a desert island, which tracks would you bring with you? What would be your first selection?
Wow, I'm impressed that you've managed to keep the... Kirsty, it's amazing to meet you. Actually, I'm not going to spoil what's going on here. Kirsty Young, I listen to you on Radio 4, one of my secret pleasures, and here I am at Cabelli drinking a cold cup of coffee in your presence. So, yeah, you know, I'll happily die on a desert island after this experience. But music, you say? Okay, well, the first tune I thought to bring along, I brought along because not only because of this, it's from the year I was born. So it's good to kind of start within your lifetime. I think some people... It's a tune called Handsworth Revolution. Handsworth is an area in Birmingham in the early 80s, became known for its riots. which is a great way to become known, which obviously kind of detracts from some of the reasons why there were riots there. But anyway, this tune came out in 78. It's called Handsworth Revolution. I remember it's one of my earliest kind of memorable tunes as a kid, and it's, you know, it's explicitly political, and I always associate it with the riots that came later. And it's by a band called Still Pulse, and originally for a reggae tune I was thinking, you know, the obvious Bob Marley, you know, one of the earliest tunes I remember is Buffalo Soldier. But he was once asked who his favourite reggae band was, and he said it was Still Pulse, and I think the dude had good taste.
jazz represent art all over the world.
Okay, next up we've got two members from Spanner. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Em, a member of Spanner, playing Penny Whistle in a ska band. Unusual choice, but there you go.
Awesome choice, yeah.
And I'm Barry Cade, from Spanner.
Cool. To kick off, can you guys tell me how your group got started?
So we started in, none of us are really that sure, but we started around about 2001 from the wreckage of a folk punk band, interestingly, called Disruptive Element, as that one sort of nosedived. So Spanner came about, nicked some of the old songs basically and carried on.
Did you play in music or play in bands before Spanner or...?
I was in Anarcho Foco, as they was. We haven't really played together for a while, playing Penny Whistle in that band. But yeah, that kind of faded a little bit, so I became a bit of a renter whistle. Ended up playing a few songs with Spanner and then somehow accidentally joined when we were on tour. So yeah.
So you didn't have to like convince people to let you in with your whistle?
No, I had a 9-seater tour van, which I think kind of helped, but... Okay. I'm not sure if that's the only reason.
To the van.
Yeah.
How would you guys
that's
describe...
a shocking allegation.
Talent alone. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you guys describe your style? And would you say that it's, like, overtly political?
Militant ska punk is what we've kind of stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
And we call it militant because, yes, it is very much political.
Yeah.
And it's an extension of our politics.
Cool.
Always has been, always will be. Where we feel happiest is doing benefit gigs down a plough and places like that.
Yeah, great.
So, yeah.
Can you tell me, like, what some of your songs are about or how your politics specifically work into your music?
That's quite a big question. So we sing about, you know, some of the usual kind of punk staples like war and work and try not to work too much. Yeah, kind of struggle against state, capital... The usual, really. But also, you know, we will have a little dabble in things like, you know, being good to each other and try not to reproduce the sort of shit that we're supposed to be against.
Nice.
With songs like Autonomous Spaces and...
Yeah. Very cool.
And Punk as Fuck, which is a bit of a critique of the punk scene, that, you know, sometimes we need to take a bit of a look at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we speak about a range of things, or perhaps more accurately rant about a wide range of issues, or as wide as we can.
And do you feel like the music that you play is like an extension of your activism?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me personally, going on tour and playing in different places, I've met so many people who are into similar things, have similar politics and been able to, you know, kind of use the word network, but to meet people all over the place and kind of link up. Yeah, and playing, as we say, playing benefit gigs, doing fundraisers and things like that, always good fun. But yeah, you're getting a message out there and raising money for good things as well, so...
Inevitably, when you're involved in, as we are, with like long-term efforts for radical social change, you're going to end up doing stuff that is just not fun, or having stuff done to you that's not fun. So we like to try and mix politics and pleasure as much as we can, and we think we've done a fairly good job of that.
What bands inspire you politically and/or musically?
Well, playing the Penny Whistle, I've got more of a kind of a folk interest, I guess, and musically, big fan of the Pogues. Have been since I was little. Along similar vein is an Australian folk punk band called Mutiny, who,
yes.
Yeah, are brilliant. And I think, yeah, just bands along those lines, I just love the chaos, I think. Mm. It's not folk, it's not punk, it's just somewhere in the middle and it's just completely chaotic, but also, you know, making a good point at the same time. Just, yeah, noise and chaos are two of my favourite things.
Anarcho Foco.
Mm.
amongst others. No, from the old guard, for me, it'd be like, yeah, obviously Crass, Conflict, Subhumans, Culture Shock. They're my sort of old faves. It's hard to kind of pin it down, really.
But yeah, being in and being able to be friends with some people who really inspire me and are just, yeah, my favourite bands are my friends, so it's great. And yeah, I've just bought a trombone, so keep your ears open or your earplugs handy. I'm not sure which.
We're not scared of mixing the folk and the punk.
Yeah,
awesome.
Folk music was punk, the original punk music as we see it.
Cool.
Maybe.
Something like that. Can you guys just give me a quick roundup as well about the last gig that you did at the Black Swan?
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, I think my favourite part of that gig was our cover of Salt and Pepper's Push It, renamed Smash It. That went down pretty well. There was a lot of dancing. I messed up completely, but yeah, it was just good fun. It was great just seeing everybody, just all really good friends of mine in the front dancing around. So yeah,
as we said from the stage, you know, we felt totally honoured and proud to play at that gig. You know, some of us are involved with Bristol Defendant Solidarity and ongoing kind of efforts at looking after people who've fallen foul of the law, and there's more of us every day. So we raised over 800 quid at that gig. The gig was epic. There were seven bands, again, like seven of our favourite bands, playing that night, and loads of shit-hot DJs. And that was the epitome of kind of mixing politics and pleasure for me that night. It was fucking uproar. And yeah, there's plenty more where that came from.
And I won a bottle of wine on the raffle, so
I won a fucking Stokes Croft mug.
Oh no, don't develop Stokes Croft.
Yeah.
We could have combined and drunk red wine.
I gave it to a good friend and comrade to see her on her way to greener pastures, and I think she saw the significance of it.
Nice one. Cool. Cheers.
No worries.
Nice one.
So in some ways, I kind of want to dedicate this tune to some of the trolls on Bristol Indie Media who feel really concerned that Radio Cabelli is taken over by the women. So I'm still not quite sure what that means, but I thought, you know, we could maybe celebrate that moment with a call to action from La Tigra with FYR.
We'll be right back.
women's hour.
Okay, a massive kind of leap musically now. We're back in the UK, but we're bringing in a North American sound. It's a tune from a collective called Nasha. They're an Asian underground, East London-based drum and bass producing crew. This is a tune called Gaza Strip by Zaid featuring Saul Williams.
The greatest Americans have not been born yet. They are waiting patiently for the past to die. Please give blood, George Bush. Please give blood, Ashcroft. Please give blood so that the beings in waiting will find their way into the wounds of warrior women.
Not by our hearts.
Another world is possible, and we pledge to make it real.
We're going to talk a bit about the strike day on November 30th. I had the pleasure of walking around with my little dictaphone, talking to folks, various union members and such and such. And for those of you who weren't there, I don't know what the official numbers were for that march. It was quite a lot. I was impressed. It was big.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of kids as well, which was really lovely. If you've been kicking about for a little while, doing marches for a while, people be marching for a while now, it's a form of protest. And I don't know, there's just sort of something to be said for being politely coaxed around corners by policemen and having your little banner and, you know, asking politely for your demands and such and such. I don't know, maybe I'm just becoming really cynical and pessimistic, but I was really bored, to be frank, like just walking around for ages and people who I was interviewing. Whilst I'm like happy that people are on the streets, I just feel like we've sort of missed potential.
It was good to see that many people out, granted. Yeah. But yeah, maybe with time, as the cuts hit, we will see people taking more action, there being more marches and who knows. But there was also the Santa, the Bristol Uncut demo as well that went through Broadmead that sort of named and shamed tax dodgers and the like and things. And the police arrested Santa, which was shocking.
Yeah, but that was good, running around with a black block in a way that was like passive. It was sort of quite nice. It was just like everyone running around and then the cops chasing and then it's like, no, we're just going to stand here and sing a song. Nope, we're going to run away again. Nope, we're just going to sing. And then the cops are like, oi, oi, and like pushing everyone out of the way and everyone's just like singing their songs.
So that was kind
of... And then when like a whole bunch of us got into boots and then half the cops like blocked off the rest of boots and half of us were in boots just like singing and waiting for like a little like looting, but that didn't happen. Like, put my items back on the shelf. So that was quite nice. You know, random way. I liked that it was sing-songy, just like pissing around and wasting police time. So we're going to go to... So I did some Vox Pops with some folks from the day, with some UK Uncut people, Black Bloc people, and other random union people. So yeah, we're going to go to those interviews now.
Can you just let me know why you're here at the strike?
To support the strike, because I'm not with government worker myself. I work in a shop, so I had to take today off, but I believe strongly in what they're doing. This opposition to get cuts in general really is my purpose for being here.
And what do you make of the turnout today?
It looks good to me. I can't tell how many people there are, but I think judging by the amount of people we saw coming down here, like, it looks good.
Can you just tell me why you're here?
Basically, I'm a member of the Society of Cropodists and Podiatrists, and we are striking because basically the government wants to increase our pensions contributions by 50%. And basically we've had a pay freeze for the past 2 years, and the pension is they want us to pay more, work for longer, and basically get less. So we're not happy about that, so that's why.
And are you a part of a broader union, or is this just your workplace?
It's a Society of Cropodists and Podiatrists.
And how many people from your workplace are here?
I think we've got about 18 people. Out of 30.
Oh, so about half your workplace is here striking. Awesome. And what do you make of the future of the strike? Like, what's your next step as a society?
We're just waiting for more sort of government negotiations. So fingers crossed this will, you know, get the message across that we're serious about things.
Okay, do you want to tell me why you're on the march?
Because my mum made me.
Why do you think your mum might have made you?
Because she won't let me stay at home by myself.
Do you know why everyone's gathered here?
Because the government's being bad to people.
Yeah, totally. Right on. Cool, can you let me know about the action that's proposed after the strike?
It's just your basic UK Uncut kind of action, where we'll be visiting a number of stores who They've been a bit rubbish, really. Marks and Spencer's on the list, who signed a letter to the Telegraph supporting spending cuts. We've got Topshop, with Philip Green evading enough tax to pay for 20,000 nurses. We've got Lloyd's TSB, because all banks are terrible, and they encourage tax evasion with their wealthiest customers.
Bang on. What's the proposed sort of action that you're asking people to do, though?
Just go and visit them, and if they happen to close their doors whilst we're there, that would be a bonus.
Cool. So you're hoping that people like take over the stores or like leaflet in the stores? What's the story?
It's that kind of thing. It's just turn up and sort of see what people feel like doing.
But cause a bit of mayhem.
Spread some awareness rather than cause mayhem.
Oh, okay. Okay, what do you think of the march?
I'm kind of bored at the moment. Nothing really seems to be happening and it's going really slowly. And it looks like we might be about to just go into Castle Park and finish, which would be a bit lame and boring.
What do you want to happen?
I'm hoping we'll go through the town centre and then people can occupy some shops and people will hopefully see and get involved and actually make something of having all these people together.
Yeah, organising some direct action?
Yeah.
I saw you before with the banner in front of the cop camera. How was that being responded to?
The coppers were aggressively filming us, like talking about how we looked and what we were doing and filming our shoes and stuff. Basically trying to intimidate us out of it. But the whole thing they're doing is meant to just intimidate people out of actually doing things or even coming to these things. So I think if we messed up their filming for a bit, then that's worth it.
Hells yeah. Do you feel like the police are particularly concentrated with their filming in a particular part of the march?
Well, I'm with the Anarchist AFED group, and we've got our own few coppers specially assigned to us, following us around, and the evidence gathering team's paying us a lot of attention as well. They also actually stole one of our leaflets earlier from somebody's hand.
One of the ones, the anti-cut Santa ones?
One of the Santa block ones.
And what do you reckon for the, like, what's the next step from here, like, in your politics?
I don't know, to be honest, at the moment. I'm hoping there'll be more strikes and possibly I can organise to do stuff to support them more practically. Yeah. Like, I was up at the UE occupation this morning, and they'd actually, the students had occupied one of the main buildings and locked it down so that the scabs couldn't get into work. And I think solidarity like that, doing things the unions can't do, is really effective.
How many people were at UE?
I think there were about 30 on the occupation.
Awesome. And was it, like, well attended by people outside?
Not hugely. There were a few of us there who'd heard about it and gone down to help. It was mainly the students themselves doing it.
That's awesome. Cool.
Hello. We are back on the desert island, or before you go to the desert island. So, in preparation for your journey, how are you feeling?
Well, I can't find my map, but, you know, if anyone's got a compass, I'm sure I'll be fine.
Yes, I guess that's how one gets stuck on a desert island.
Fuck.
We have some upcoming questions as well, because when you go to the desert island, you automatically get the complete works of Shakespeare and the Bible or other appropriate philosophical book. And I've been thinking about this, and I'm aware, DJ Black Rainbow, you have some thoughts on politics and things.
One or two.
So, I was wondering, the Bible or other important philosophical book that you'd like to bring, that will be quite a decision for you to make.
Well, I intend to stop smoking this year, but if I don't manage it, or if I do take a bit of tobacco with me to the desert island, I find that Bible pages are really, really thin, so they're perfect for lighting fires with, or, you know, for smoking. And the Bible's quite big, and the work of Shakespeare, I'm a bit of a geek, so I might actually enjoy that. So if I just want to smoke my way through the first few weeks, I think the Bible will be fine.
And if we could go to your fifth track, what will you be having us listen to now?
Okay, so we now take a trip over to Latin America, and this is a tune by a band called Calle 13, and it's a tune called Latino America, and it features some amazing female Latin American artists as well. So there's Totó, La Momposina, Susana Baca, and María Rita, and it's a tune about the many faces of people, of struggles and of resistance in Latin America. And so it's this really beautiful kind of like love letter to the people of Latin America, whilst at the same time being a very clear message of like struggle and protection of the earth.
Soy lo que dejaron, soy toda la sobra de lo que se robaron. Un pueblo escondido en la cima, mi piel es de cuero, por eso aguanta cualquier clima. Soy una fábrica de humo, mano de obra campesina para tu consumo. Frente de frío en el medio del verano, el amor en los tiempos del cólera, mi hermano. El sol que nace y el día que muere, con los mejores atardeceres. Soy el desarrollo en carne viva, un discurso político sin saliva. Las caras más bonitas que he conocido, soy la fotografía de un desaparecido, la sangre dentro de tus venas. Soy un pedazo de tierra que vale la pena una canasta con frijoles. Soy Maradona contra Inglaterra anotándote dos goles. Soy lo que sostiene mi bandera, la espina dorsal del planeta en mis cordilleras. Soy lo que me enseñó mi padre, el que no quiere a su patria no quiere a su madre. Soy América Latina, un pueblo sin pierna pero que camina. Oye,
tú no puedes comprar al viento, tú no puedes comprar al sol, tú no puedes comprar la lluvia, tú no puedes comprar el calor, tú no puedes comprar las nubes, tú no puedes comprar los colores, tú no puedes comprar mi alegría, tú no puedes comprar mis dolores, tú no puedes comprar al viento, tú no puedes comprar al sol, tú no puedes comprar la lluvia, tú no puedes comprar el calor, tú no puedes comprar las nubes, tú no puedes comprar los colores, tú no puedes comprar mi alegría, tú no puedes comprar mis dolores.
Tengo los lagos, tengo los ríos, tengo mis dientes pa' cuando me sonrío, la nieve que maquilla mis montañas. Tengo el sol que me seca y la lluvia que me baña. Un desierto embriagado con peyote, un trago de pulque para cantar con los coyotes. Todo lo que necesito, tengo a mis pulmones respirando azul clarito, la altura que sofoca. Soy las muelas de mi boca, mascando coca, el otoño con sus hojas desmayadas, los versos escritos bajo la noche estrellada, una viña repleta de uva, un cañaveral bajo el sol en Cuba. Soy el mar Caribe que vigila las casitas, haciendo rituales y agua bendita, el viento que peina mi cabello. Soy todos los santos que cuelgan de mi cuello, el jugo de mi lucha no es artificial, porque el abono de mi tierra es natural.
Tú no puedes comprar el viento, tú no puedes comprar el sol, tú no puedes comprar la lluvia, tú no puedes comprar el calor, tú no puedes comprar las nubes, tú no puedes comprar los colores, tú no puedes comprar mi alegría, tú no puedes comprar mis dolores. No se puede comprar un viento, no se puede comprar un sol, no se puede comprar la lluvia, no se puede comprar un calor, no se puede comprar las nubes, no se puede comprar las cores, no se puede comprar mi alegría, no se puede comprar mis dolores. No puedes comprar el sol, no puedes comprar la lluvia, vino vino amor, mostrando tu inato.
Aquí se comparte, lo mío es tuyo. Este pueblo no se ahoga con marullo, y si se derrumba, yo lo reconstruyo. Tampoco pestañeo cuando te miro, para que te recuerde de mi apellido. La operación Cóndor invadiendo mi nido, perdono pero nunca olvido, oye.
Vamos caminando, aquí se respira luz.
Great. So, yeah, at the Bristol Defendants Solidarity gig, which was, as we've sort of mentioned as well, which was a great gig for the Bristol Defendants Solidarity group, which is a group that basically supports people who've been arrested during the Stokescroft uprising and other such events and things. So its aim just to provide, make ensure that people get adequate legal support and don't get railroaded through the criminal justice system by the sort of right-wing government and things. So we've seen a few people go down recently, so our thoughts are with them. And if you're interested in getting involved, please come up to a Bristol Defendants Solidarity meeting. And if you have any concerns as well about anything that's going on, I think I've seen a few posters around town about just how to get in touch with folks, so please look that up. But yeah, we spoke to Cop on Fire, who are a fantastic sort of Scottish punkish kind of band from Belgium, and they make fantastic music. So we talked to them late at night, so forgive the sound quality, late at night outside the Black Swan, which is great, and so we'll go to that now.
Send her a motherfucker!
That a healthy society must stop at nothing to cleanse itself of evil.
Yes, I'd have to agree. Did I?
A bullet in your fascist mind, and I got it full of bullets in your white front trunk. And you pull up.
Again, we're back at the benefit and we're here with Cop on Fire. Hey guys.
Hello there.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hey, so we're sort of just talking to bands that do really cool radical music.
That must be us.
Yes, that's you. And so we're just wondering what inspires you to do the kind of music that you do. And
well, places like the scene in Bristol are very inspiring to us. I mean, obviously we did stuff before we ever heard of where Bristol was on the map, but we started out being very pissed off, and we went from there, and we kind of tried to do something with the anger, which is not just playing in a band, but playing in a band is one of the happy parts of it.
Do you?
I've only been in the band for like 2-3 years, maybe, something like that, and the band started out in 2004, I think. But I was always like a fan of the band, you know. I was really, 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 really into Cop on Fire. And the atmosphere at Cop on Fire gigs, I never witnessed something like that before, because there was a band playing with no distortion, no heavy parts, and they still could really, really, really get this atmosphere, this really riotous atmosphere.
I do think, just thinking back of it, like around 1993, I got first time in touch with Reclaim the Streets, and the fact that you could have really like festive music on a pissed off basis with a good reason to be, you know, like having a party and being not good citizen at the same time, which we like very much. And I think that comes from England, the Reclaim the Streets thing, the road protests, and that got national press in our country around 1993, and that's one thing that inspired me to make the link between music and activism.
Yeah, that's wicked. So do you see sort of the role of music to not be, I think when we talked to the Autonomads earlier, and they were talking about the role of music not just being about make love songs, you know, which love is a wonderful thing, obviously, but like just sort of also having a role in sort of pushing forwards our communities of resistance and these kinds of things?
Yeah, it's very easy to write cliché songs about activism as well. And we noticed, like, even 13 years ago, an old band of mine, the lyrics got like kind of collected by the cops as evidence on certain things which had happened in our town. So from there on it's very difficult. Like sometimes I'm like, either I'm gonna do this thing, put my words into practice, or either I'm gonna put this practice into words, because you have to stick up for some things, because especially at the time I think one of the main points one of my earlier bands wanted to make was about property destruction and stuff, which was getting slagged off very much with like violence against fascism, which was almost like a splitting discussion in the scene. So we kind of took a stand for these less popular issues, but at the same time that got us a certain kind of brand which was easy for the cops. But how do you say, so it's often, it's very difficult, like, I mean, you want to speak about the things that keep you busy, but you don't want to give everything on a plate. You know, we've had people come to us after gigs and say, like, I'm interested in this direct action thing you're talking about. How do I get started? And it's like, oh man, read a lot of books. I mean, don't just listen to a band when it comes down to this. Most things are in books. I think we just kind of hand out a controversial point. You know, like saying violence against fascism, fascist isn't just a good thing, it's a thought out strategy. But then there's loads of books to read about this. But at the same time, we're always open for discussion, which means I spend a lot of my time after gigs discussing these kind of issues, while the others have a good time drinking. But, well, yeah.
We're doing interviews with Radio Cavallo.
Yeah, repeating myself once more, but, you know,
this
getting
way
the violent message out there, burn everything, burn! All right.
And so, yeah, because in Belgium, there's been, I think, across Europe, and we've seen sort of this shift to the right as well. And so, you know, groups like the Vlaams Bloc, I believe, at least I haven't followed recent political developments in Belgium, but they, you know, they're quite strong and they're quite active, and there's student groups as well that sort of do marches in the streets. It's a bit disturbing, and you just see a lot of the face of racism and fascism sort of out there and things. And how do they organize their music, and their sort of, is the music something they use to push things? Is this a counter to that kind of message?
It's hard to tell. I think it's the same, like, as much as I wish that our band would create a whole army of rebellious uncitizens, we mostly like play the clown to people who spend 2 years of their teenage time being rebellious, like, which it goes for a lot of people, obviously not most of them, luckily. But so I mean, it's the same with Nazis, you know, like, they act as if they are very serious for a few years and then they grow out of it, but at the same time it's hard to ignore the threat which is there from what they get up to in the streets. But the thing is that these medieval ideas are now in the minds of at least 70% of the people in Belgium, because 70% of the votes goes to parties who openly are right-wing and conservative. That is not to say the people who pretend to be left-wing and open-minded and turn out to be conservative as well. Now that 70% of the people who actually vote to go back to the Middle Ages, which is complete stupidity. And I think, yeah, I think it goes for most of Europe. But I think, you know, soon people will find, when their pension funds run dry and all that shit, that, you know, it might be better to go the way of Greece than to go back to the Middle Ages and new feudalism. So,
do you have anything?
Yeah, you asked about the, like, fascist music.
Yeah.
We as an anarchist movement, like, we I'm in a collective called Freedom and Fire Collective. We do loads and loads of benefit gigs, but like the fascist, like, really blood and honor kind of stuff, and it's more secret. They have to, yeah, like, rent places under false names and then do their gigs. So I really like the fact that they have to hide and that they can't be open about it. And I think that, like, maybe not 90%, but like 70 or 80% of their crowd is, like, just there, yeah, for the music. Like, yeah, they seek Heil probably, and then they go home to their families and
What's some of your favorite music that sort of inspired you when you were younger?
Yeah, it's very bad. I mean, I came from Cross and Conflict, but then, you know, seeing what these bands are up to nowadays, I realize why a lot of people get put off with punk, because there's a lot of bands shouting a lot of easy going in slogans, and maybe at some point they mean them, but once they stop meaning them and acting them, it turns out to be a very sad joke, and that's when a lot of people feel betrayed, and that's why a lot of people quite rightly leave the punk scene. There's kind of a family feeling that stuck with me, and I don't think I'm ever going to lose that. And it's kind of like, playing gigs is not what's going to change the world, but, you know, we do get some kind of you know, like the minstrels used to do, sometimes you get to pass a message out to people where only half of the crowd otherwise would actually know that this is happening. You get people to write to political prisoners, you get people to, you know, pick up information, get involved, go to a certain action on a certain day. And all that is part of a family feeling. Yeah, in that way, activism, sometimes I portray it as something fun, but sometimes it should really be fun as well, because otherwise it's frustrating if you start counting the bare results of what you do. But it can be a really relief, and it can be good, you know, to do these things in different groups, kind of. It's kind of like bonding. It's, yeah, it's a family feeling. What can I say? I'm very, very soapy about that. Well, thanks to everyone for the support. And
on our desert island, when you have so you have the complete works of Shakespeare, the Bible, which you'll use for rolling cigarettes, I presume. You can bring one other book and a luxury item. So what will those be?
Jeez, I hadn't thought to think of a book. Well, there was a good plug there from Aldous Huxley, of the complete works of Aldous Huxley, or Standing Our Ground. I think the person that just popped in my head was Audre Lorde. I've got a great book of all of her political writings and essays and articles. And a luxury item, some tobacco, so that I can make the Bible worthwhile.
Okay, we're gonna go to an interview with the Autonomads, and they played at the BDS gig at the Black Swan, and they were really awesome. And I've been a little bit into the Autonomads for a little while now, and then, you know, when we were chatting to them, it was just, you know, when you listen to music and you think this music is rad, and then you meet them and they are rad as well, and it's just like, wow, this is really nice. And yeah, they had some good stuff to say about their music, so we're gonna go to that now.
We have Centuria and Mitchell. Hey.
Hi!
We're here at the Bristol Defendant Solidarity Benefit gig at the Black Swan, and we're here with the Autonomads. Hello!
Hi!
Hello!
Hello!
And so we're wondering, we're sort of interviewing bands that do sort of radical, cool music and stuff. We're sort of wondering sort of what pushed you guys into wanting to start a band and sort of like do this kind of music, and did you see it as an extension of activism, or how did that work out?
It's kind of like a way to put your views across to a wider audience. Then
I guess our introduction to politics was music was fundamental in that. I guess for all of us independently from our different backgrounds, and that means that we sort of thought that it was an important way of introducing other young people to radical ideas. And I guess we just didn't think it was important singing about who we were in love with at a certain time in a certain place.
And what sort of bands did you sort of listen to when you were younger that like kicked off your interest in music and interest in politics?
I guess one for me, I mean, I started out listening like to punk music. The first band I listened to was like NOFX, but then got into stuff, I mean, like Propaganda were fairly heavily political. I could say that album, How to Clean Everything, pretty much like changed my life. I just like read it from like cover to cover, just like blown away by the ideas and the passion. And then a bit later got into bands like Crass and started exploring the whole anarcho-punk thing. And again, just blown away. Again, Crass took it to a deeper level. And just like the inspiration, I mean, they'd like the DIY politics, definitely a side of like, not another Fat Records job, I guess.
Propaganda, definitely that. How to Clean Everything is a fundamental record, because it's quite so in fairly simple terms, it's easy to hear what they're singing about, like very militantly political. And then I guess at the same time, sort of bands like Subhumans and like How to The Day the Country Died was a pretty fundamental record, and my politicisation personally.
Cool, and I was wondering sort of what have your show experiences been bad? Do you have like any really bad experiences or any really good experiences?
But like good experiences were definitely going to Europe for the first time and just seeing like how organized the DIY scene is and how it is like interconnected with the activist scene as well. That was definitely inspiring, just like Europe in general, Germany in particular. Yeah, that's it for me.
Also places in the UK, London, like when we started playing in London and Bristol, we sort of realised that there was like strong activist networks there, playing a lot of squat gigs in London, and then in Easton we did a lot. And like the Cabelli was probably the first social centre I ever went to about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, do you know what I mean? So like, and it was with this band, so it was like pretty important to us to see like what was happening in other places, inspiring us to do things. But yeah, no bad experiences to speak of really. But
do you guys ever feel like, since you're playing in a political band and stuff, that like if you know, maybe you wrote a song when you were like 20 years old and you were like singing about your politics at the time and you're like, yeah, I totally know what I'm talking about, and now you look back on that and you're like, fuck, what the hell was I saying? What did I sing to a crowd of people? Or
100%, yeah, it's something we talk about. I mean, we've got a song like Dubbing Up the Downfall. I mean, it's quite sort of I mean, we wrote the lyrics while we were in the studio, and it was a bit sort of short-sighted, and it was kind of focused around like conspiracy theories, and like we just a few years later saw the holes in the argument, realised like the
connotation. So can I ask what conspiracy theories?
Aliens? I mean, just the idea. Well, let me think of the lyrics. The Virgin on Lizards. Not quite, though.
Really damaging to be dogmatic with your politics, I guess, and like thinking, well, I said this then and I've got to stick with it throughout. Do you know what I mean? It's like you progress, don't you? When the lyrics wrote for that tune, I was 18, do you know what I mean? And now it's like 4 or 5 years on, I've grown as a person and like seen different things, been exposed to different things, and I'm not as affiliated in any way with that idea, do you know what I mean? But then, so I think it's like positive in some sense, if you can, as long as you can reflect on it.
Yeah, it's a good thing that you can just say, well, no, we don't think that anymore, you know what I mean? Yeah.
What's like your favourite song to play of your own? Or if it's a cover, what's your like the killer song that you guys just fucking rock out to when you're on stage?
It's in the practice room, it's something we do, Working by Coxborough. It's because it's funny.
Yeah, I reckon. I don't know. My personal favourite's it's on our next record called Best of Both, about getting your food out of the supermarket bins. I just sort of quite like playing it. Nice sort of scary and dubby tunes. So
skipping.
Yeah.
Does it mention like gems that you've found over the years in bins and things like that?
No.
We could maybe do a remix.
A rap with all the reference, like the Trash Wiki. Do you guys know that one?
Yeah.
It refers to the white bread that you always find in Skips, which is Best of Both, and okay, it's a play on that.
The other name we were going to call it is Love to Toast, you see, which is another bread that you find a mass abundance of in supermarket bins.
Yeah,
the staple of every skipper, I guess.
What's your favourite song?
My favourite song? Probably we do like a Linton Kwesi Johnson cover, Fight Them Back, an anti-fascist tune. I think that's pretty good. I've only been in the band for the last year out of five, so yes.
And were you like a huge fan before you joined the band?
Of Autonomads? I was a fan before I joined, yeah.
I had
a t-shirt, a few patches, yeah. Rock and roll.
But you write cool, feminist, zine-ad Jerusalem called Fallopian Falafel. That is awesome. Please tell me about your zine.
It's a zine that I started back in 2007. I started it first as something personal because I wanted to find something to do with my writing education. After I read the book A Girl's Guide to Taking Over the World, I thought it was such a great idea to write a zine.
I want to focus particularly on one issue of your zine where you did a music issue on women in music. So can you tell me about girl culture that's happening in your world, both globally, but also the Riot Girl world that's happening in Israel as well?
I included some of the Riot Girl bands that I've heard of, you know, are considered Israeli, and I don't know, there weren't that many. I think that I found maybe like 3 or 4 of them. Later on, I tried to look more into that. It's kind of hard because like the Riot Girl scene in essence is also very underground, and in Israel it's even more underground.
Yeah.
It's hard to find them, really. Is there any Riot Girl bands that people want to find in Israel? They're mostly from Tel Aviv.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in Jerusalem, so it's even harder for me to find them.
Yeah.
There was this one Riot Girl band that I really, really liked, and they're called Hashuriyot, which means the puddles.
Can you tell me what Riot Girl is?
I can tell you what it means to me, but I think for me it just means girl love, and it means loving yourself and loving other girls, and really focusing on the real problem, which is patriarchy, and not fighting the system instead of fighting other women.
Yeah, and not putting up with shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'm just wondering if, do people have you pegged as, like, the only feminist in Jerusalem, or is there, like, a community there of women and men who maybe are interested in feminist politics, who are making zines or making music or, you know, working on direct actions or anything like that?
I'm trying to actually find that community, and yeah. After I failed to find that community, I tried to create it, and
yep.
It's very, very hard because, I mean, it's already, you know, politics, the political situation in Israel is hard enough as it is, so,
yeah.
You know, I think that feminist politics is not something that's, like, high up on people's priority list when it comes to politics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about how you feel Riot Girl music combines activism and music?
I think it encourages activism. I mean, it's very, very bluntly, like, feminist. So, obviously, you know, it encourages mostly, I think, personal activism
mm-hmm.
to change yourself, to have a sort of, like, an inner revolution within yourself and, like,
yeah.
try and change your views of yourself as a woman and of your body and there are women around you.
Yeah, totally, your relationships, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, Riot Girl speaks more, you know, directly to women themselves and girls and to encourage them to be strong and to be a community, to support one another. And
yeah. What bands do you have a historical association with in relation to maybe your own Riot Girl awakening?
Aside from Bikini Kill?
yeah, I know. Bikini Kill's there for everyone, yeah.
Yeah, that's really the first band that comes to mind when I think Riot Girl.
Yeah.
I think aside from that, there's a lot of other punk bands, Killers,
yeah.
Against Seven, Jack Off Jill,
yeah, classic.
Lunatic.
Is there a connection between your love of metal and Riot Girl? Is there a crossover?
Yeah, definitely. When I first heard of, you know, death metal, and it wasn't like something that I was very much into because vocalists in metal are men. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's a very male-dominated scene.
Yeah.
But then I heard that there are also women who sing metal, you
yeah.
know, and I don't mean bands like Evanescence and Nightwish that sound very opera with metal. I really like growling female vocalists. That
yeah.
that was the thing that really spoke to me. I thought, wow, this is so, it sounds so powerful, and like, you know, it was very inspiring. So like one of the bands is Arch Enemy.
Can you yeah. just tell me about your like favorite activist tune?
Well, I mean, there's Rebel Girl, right? There's
yeah.
that. There's also, I think my favorite tune is Arch Enemy's Revolution Begins.
And what's that about?
It's about, you know, not like falling into any kind of roads or rules that people set out for you and making your own way and breaking free from whatever people expect of you. Not being a slave to the system and just creating this revolution again within yourself
mm-hmm.
first.
And then taking that outwards. Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, tell me about Rebel Girl. That's the staple feminist tune. Like, what does that mean to you?
It's really, I think it focuses more on girl love because, like, you know, when she says, you know, there's this girl and I want to be her best friend, and
yeah,
I feel that a lot when I see like other girls, you know, around Israel, if they're, you know, dressed sort of like, you know, in a punk kind of way, and they look like total Riot Girls, and I'm like, wow,
yeah.
I totally wish, you know, I could be this girl's friend, and like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of just looking at her and saying, oh, she's such a freak and I'm jealous of her or, you know, I hate her or whatever. Like, no, I want to be her friend.
Yeah, yeah, because she's the queen of the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So that's why it's so hard in Israel. But, like, if you're an activist and you have some kind of inspiration, you just continue and do whatever it is you do. Bristol, get ready for the biggest
one-night event. Hey, what are hit the town? Radio Cabele. Your anarchist radio.
Doop 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 doop. So if you're coming back from the Christmas holidays and you've been a bit, whoa, that's a lot of time with the family and watching bad Sky TV or whatever it is you watch. Anyway, so if you're looking for stuff to do, I've been looking around and there is loads and loads of stuff to do coming up in Bristol. If you're interested in taking a permaculture design course in 2012, there's a course coming up. This course runs every Thursday evening for 13 weeks from the 5th of January to March 29th. The course includes a choice of field trips to inspiring permaculture gardens, farms, woodlands, buildings, and communities around the Southwest. That sounds great. If you're interested to get more information, please email bristol_permaculture@yahoo.co.uk, or there's also more information about that on Bristol Indie Media. The No Borders Film Cafe Night will be happening at Cabele on Thursday, January 5th. Bristol No Borders hosts the first film night of the year, first cafe night of the year. They'll be showing Michael Winterbottom's acclaimed film In This World. In This World is a 2002 British docudrama directed by Michael Winterbottom. The film follows two young Afghan refugees as they leave a refugee camp in Pakistan for a better life in London. Since their journey is quote-unquote illegal, it's fraught with danger. They must use back channels, bribes, and smugglers to achieve their goal. The film starts at 7:45, but before that, starting at 7, there'll be hot dogs, or not dogs, popcorn, mulled cider, or /apple juice if you're a non-alcoholic person. We've just been talking lots about the Bristol Defendant Solidarity gig, which was fantastic, at the Black Swan, and there's going to be a big benefit for the Autonomous Spaces of Bristol, which is, of course, clearly, like, way important to support, and Friday, January 13th, at the Black Swan, starting at 9 p.m. The gig costs £5 or £6, and there's bands and DJs, and it promises to be amazing. So the recently opened Hydra Books, based at 34 Old Market, is hosting Meet the Author with Clive Hendry. He will talk about his book, The Safety Net. And this book is a fact-based novel set in a hostel for homeless people. And the book follows 8 people living and working in the hostels as they struggle with the loss of independence within the bureaucracy and inefficiencies of the welfare state. The Bristol Radical Film Festival will be happening in Bristol from February 27th to March 4th. This festival aims to screen some of the most socially and politically engaged documentary films from around the world, focusing in particular on British and Latin American work. It's taking place over the course of a week, and the festival will host screenings in a variety of community-based venues, culminating in a week of screenings, talks, and workshops and debates at an entirely volunteer-run and not-for-profit cinema, The Cube. And to find out more information, they have a Facebook page. So if you just Google Bristol Radical Film Festival 2012, you get straight to their Facebook page. Bristol Anarchist Black Cross will be hosting its monthly letter-writing night at the Cabele Social Centre. It will be happening Sunday, January 8th. It will start at 6:30, go until about 8 or so, so come out to Cabele for a great vegan meal, and then stay and sign some letters for comrades who are inside. London No Borders, along with Goldsmith students and other groups, are organising a week-long convergence to be held in London between the 13th and 18th of February. The aim is to get together to share our knowledge and experience in relation to people's freedom of movement and share skills, network and strategize and take action. From Monday 13th to Wednesday the 15th, there will be a series of workshops and seminars, mostly at Goldsmith University in New Cross. Then from Thursday the 16th to Saturday the 18th, there will be demonstrations and actions against migration controls, so be there or be square. And then finally, Radio Cabele, woohoo, will be hosting our second trivia night. That will be so keep your eyes open and peeled and everything. It will be happening towards the end of January, so we'll clearly be bombarding you with information about that as it comes up. And if you're interested in getting involved with Radio Cabele, please email us at radiocabele@riseup.net, or come up to the trivia night and just introduce yourself or something of the sort, because we totally always need volunteers, and be fantastic.
Yeah. You know, particularly if you're a woman as well. Kind of lacking women on the show at the moment.
Yeah, it's definitely shortage.
We need more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But particular trolls as well, who have been saying that we're too feminist. You don't even know what feminist is, man. Come on. You want feminist? I'll give you a fucking feminist. I think Annie Lennox could sum it up as well by saying all this.
So our next track, what are we going to go to now?
So the UK hip-hop scene has been really pulling up its boot socks and really representing in the last kind of 18 months to 2 years. So there's quite a DIY ethic coming out in what can be seen as like more kind of mainstream, more produced sounds. So anyway, the UK hip-hop scene, it's representing, you know. But Akala, he's got this tune, came out this year, it's called Find No Enemy. It's this beautiful kind of combination of like jazzy, almost indie sound with a really conscious hip-hop, a really great position on what it means to be, again, diasporic mixed parentage here in Britain, what it means to be consuming on the backs of other people and knowing a bit of your history but still trying to strive on and just shop and put oil in your car and petrol and all of that shit, and just the end result, you know, when we'll really come to a social change is when we can look in the mirror and we don't find an enemy.
Second generation, black Caribbean and half white Scottish, whatever that means. See, lately, I feel confused with the boxes, cause to me, all they do is breed conflict. It's not that I've lost touch with reality of racism, sexism and nationality. Just to me, all seems like insanity. Why must I rob you of your humanity to feel good about mine? It's all about crime, dehumanizing's how I justify them, so I must keep lying about the history of Africa, so I can live with the massacres and repeat my mantra, Muslim terrorists, so I can sleep at night as bombs take flight. Eyes open wide but I'm blind to the sight. Too busy chasing the perfect life and the working class keep them uneducated. Truly educated men can never be a racist. Educate is to draw out what is within. Are we not all the same under the skin? I got a heart like yours that pumps blood and oxygen, and insecurities a whole lot of them. I'm scared like you deep down. I really do care that the world's not fair like you, but I don't even believe my own prayers like you. Chasing career, going nowhere like you. Lost in a fog of my own insecurity, I hold myself up as an image of purity, and I judge everybody else by the colour of the skin or the size of their wealth. But it's not good for my health, as the only one I ever really judge is myself. The oppressor must suffer like the oppressed, though I pretend I'm in control of this mess by inflating my ego, puffing my chest. See our weakness and our need to show strength for what we think strong is, cause if we're honest, true strength is the strength to be honest. And if I'm honest, I am just tired. If I'm honest, I am just tired. Tired of every day filling up my car and knowing that I'm paying for the bombs in Iraq. Tired of pretending it don't hurt my heart, of wanting change, not knowing where to start. Tired of listening to all the conditioning and all the forms that they got me filling. And next time you see what you think is a thug and despise him, please know I was just like him, cause I was like 8 first time I saw crack, same time I first smoked weed choking on blow backs. First time I saw knives penetrate flesh, it was meat cleavers to the back of the head. As I grew and teenage years passed, many more knives pierced and the shots blast. And I ain't saying I had the worst upbringing, but there's a million young men just like me in prison. We complain about racism, elevate clowns with their trousers down, swinging their dick round. Maybe that is not quite literal, but everything they do is just a stereotypical. To my real fans, I feel your pain, and I get the messages, but don't complain that we ain't got more fame. We're playing a part, they can keep the charts, all I want is your hearts. They can keep the charts, all I want is your hearts. They can keep the charts, all I want is your hearts. Call it black radio, don't make me laugh. So is black music all about tits and ass? You don't represent nothing, you're just pretending. When was the last time you ever played Hendrix or Miles Davis or John Coltrane or Ella Fitzgerald or Billie Holiday? We can call it urban, to me that's cool. If urban means street, that includes jazz too, and rock for that matter. Go ask Mick Jagger or Jimmy Page what they were listening to. The blues, not discrediting Love Zeppelin too, just giving credit where credit is due. That blog soap word rappers still use, all it really shows is we still self-abuse. That was the word that was used to kill
kill. So Coltrane and Emmett Till, that was the word that the conscience eased and made people pleased that hung you from trees. That was the word that let the whips crack. No matter what you say, you can't take it back. And I could say they're black, so I feel their pain easier. But 1915, look at Armenia. It's the whole world, this human stupidity, that we choke ourselves to death, quite literally. And I can talk with my comfortable mouth and my comfortable clothes in my comfortable house. The tables will turn, we can but stall them. Every empire on this earth has fallen. So unless we can find another way, maybe not today, but it'll come one day. And it may sound like I'm bitter, but in fact, truth be told, I am quite the opposite. I wake every day and I'm overwhelmed just to be alive and be like no one else. And the sheer weight of the thought of space is enough to keep my little ego in place. All that we chase and try to replace, all along it was right in our face. The only way we can ever change anything's to look in the mirror and to find no enemy. The only way we can ever change anything, look in the mirror and to find no enemy.
Thanks a lot. It's been fantastic.
See you next time.
Bye.